Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined by Danny Carter. And today we will be continuing our division preview series with the NFC South. We will be joined by The Athletic's Greg Aumann to talk the Bucks, Panthers.com's Darren Gant to discuss Carolina, and the Saints News Network's John Hendricks to break down New Orleans. At some point, Denny and I will probably mention the Falcons for like 2 seconds. We're going to begin with Greg. Greg, who's already with us. Greg, how are you doing? And at this moment in time, can you tell us, is Tom Brady retired, unretired? Is Rob Gronkowski retired, unretired?
I have stepped away from my phone for a minute, so I can't say with absolute authority. But last I checked, he's still going. It's been that kind of spring and summer. But
you need one of those sci-fi things where your phone is implanted in your wrist or something at this right. point.
We're very close to that now.
We're working on it.
Thanks, yeah, Tom. Very, very, very normal offseason to be a Bucks beat reporter. Just yeah, I bet that was quite, February, you're like, all right, you know, things are fine. I mean, the big man retired. Things are like finally a little calm. I guess it was March when he came back. And what was that moment like? I guess you probably had an inkling already, maybe. It seemed like
yeah, kind of definitely didn't have an inkling. It would only be 40 days, but it had just kind of gotten to that point where you've kind of come to, you know, hey, it was a fun 2 years. Now, you know, you don't know what the team's going to be like. Instead of that, you know, the season will be, you know, you really don't know if it's a good season with Tom Brady until like mid January.
Yeah.
Not very Buccaneer like. I was kind of excited about, like, you don't know who the quarterback's going to be. You don't know how good or how bad they're going to be. And there's a novelty to that, which I had known well in previous years.
Yes.
And then I was at a stoplight. I remember the stoplight I was at. And it's just you look down and like I got Brady on notification. I got a lot of people on notification. But you're like, all right, this looks real. Could someone have hacked Tom Brady's account to unwritten? No, this is probably him. Okay. And then you just from there, it's back. And then. A coaching change since then, a tight end Hall of Fame retirement, and all that kind of stuff.
You could have given me one guess where you were when like the news broke, and I could have just guaranteed he's probably in his car, like at a stoplight or something, not thinking about it at all. Well, and of course,
when he retired, I had the great luck. I flew to Vegas to write off the Pro Bowl, and it's like maybe the only 3-hour window where I'm not really. I think the Wi-Fi didn't work on the plane, and it's like literally he retired while I was on the plane. So I landed in Vegas, and it's like the first notification is like, well, it's only been 90 minutes since Tom Brady's retirement, but – and you're like, what?
I mean, what is that moment like as a beat writer? Do you like literally just like race into the terminal to sit down and open your computer?
I got lucky in that like the week before, you'll kind of pre-write retirement stories the same way if there's someone prominent who's 95 years old in the city you live in, you kind of have an obituary pre-written just in case something happens. And it was much the same way. I really had 90% of that story written, and it was just adding in. I think they actually did it while I was in the air. Like, just it was just plug in. Here's what Brady said on Twitter and Instagram. And it's like you had a story written you didn't know you wrote.
You come off the plane, you had to a byline.
It's like, wow, okay. And no, I mean, like I said, The Athletic did a great job without any of my actual live real-time help at all.
I think Tom Brady's retirement story has been written since 2014.
Oh, no, exactly. There were writers that had that, like, I'm pretty sure this is the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, here you thought you were having an unproductive flight with no Wi-Fi, and you get off the plane to a byline. That's pretty That's pretty good. Well, no more Tom Brady talk. We'll assume he's going to play. We'll get to Gronk a little bit later, but Greg, we will begin with Chris Godwin, who is one of the most important players in fantasy football when he's healthy. I mean, he's like a wide receiver one, especially with Tom Brady. He's almost guaranteed to finish in the top 12 when he is healthy, but we know he's recovering from a torn ACL. And just what is your feel? I mean, we know you might just be kind of making an educated guess. What is your feel on like his week one status? Is the PUP list, which is now 4 games instead of 6 games, a possibility? Where do you think we're at with Chris Godwin's health right now?
Yeah, it's one of those things where like the team goes out of their way. They've very consistently said how pleased they are with his progress, how well he's doing, how on schedule he is, but they won't say what the schedule is. So it's one of those where, you know, he had a fairly significant surgery above and beyond just a regular ACL, which could be at least a 9-month deal for most people. So I go in. What I would say first and foremost is that having him healthy and looking like Chris Godwin in November and December is much more important than having him that way in September. So the way they signed Russell Gage, gave Russell Gage $10 million a year, felt like something you did to have a number two receiver in place, even when Godwin wasn't there to be your number two receiver. So from a fantasy standpoint, it's interesting in that I think by the time it really matters for fantasy, Godwin should be Godwin. And when you're in the playoffs, he should be a guy who, you know, probably is the Bucs' best fantasy receiver. Just a ton of volume, ton of catches, maybe not as many touchdowns as Mike Evans, but pretty close. But in terms of whether he's there, like their first 4 games are insanely tough. It's at Cowboys, at Saints, Chiefs, and Packers. Pretty like 4 of their top 6 games of the year are in the first 4 weeks of the season. So they could use him, but I don't think they'll rush him. So again, I my instinct right now is that it wouldn't be a PUP list situation. But I really don't know. And I, like I said, I don't think there's any reason to push him to get out there to even practice before he's ready. Because they just gave the guy a 3-year deal. Their goal is to have him healthy at the end of this season, not the beginning.
Yeah, I was going to say that was an interesting point, too, that you made, where we know with the Bucs and Tom Brady, it's November, December, January. That's most important. And also, yeah, like a weird factor where like Chris Godwin is paid now. So whereas maybe before in a contract year, you know, it's kind of a weird when you're a contract year player. Do you want to rush back and make sure you get on the field, start getting your numbers in there? Or do you want to make sure that you're healthy so you can hit the ground running and not suffer a setback and then get paid? But yeah, I get the feeling with that, with the contract, there's no reason for either side to really like force this right now until he's like truly healthy.
Right. And Russell Gage, by the same token, like Russell Gage, I feel really good about him as a fantasy play for the first month of the season. I don't know if he'll be looking like a wide receiver two in December when you really need him to be. So I'm not sure how that'll shake out, but they'll both be guys that get a lot of passes from Tom Brady. Gage has never had more than 4 touchdowns in a season. I think he'll do that easily, regardless of what Godwin does this year.
Speaking of Gage, we've seen Tom Brady with the Bucs support 3 fantasy viable receivers with Antonio Brown, Evans, and Godwin. Do you think that it's possible that Gage could kind of get, you know, move his way into that pecking order to be a consistent producer? And how, I guess, how much production would we be looking at while Godwin is sidelined? Because I'm guessing, you know, he will be sidelined for at least part of the season.
Yeah, what I think really helps all three of them is that Gronk isn't chipping in on these touches either. So the fact that he doesn't, I mean, they're kind of weak at receiver, at tight end, I should say, right now. They drafted 2 guys, but one of them, I mean, their best rookie, Kate Otten, hasn't even practiced yet. He's coming off ankle surgery. Cam Brate is a great tight end, great red zone threat, but probably not a tight end one in the same sense that Gronk is. So I do think the Bucs probably have more three receiver looks and less double tight end looks.
Yeah.
And I think that helps. So like I said, if you think about it, let's say we just default Tom Brady at 40 touchdowns, you got to think that's like 12 to 14 Evans, 10 to 12 Godwin. And I think you probably start at like 8 for Gage, if I'm guessing, if he's healthy for a full season.
Pretty
which
good.
Again, he has 9 in his NFL career. So it's a good year for him.
But the kind of receiver Brady had so much success with in New England. Like this has kind of like been like not the career norm for Brady in Tampa, where he has like actually elite receivers. He was used to trying to get no disrespect to Russell Gage, obviously, but he was used to like turning players like Russell Gage into like fantasy superstars. And it's been interesting that he's had actual superstars. And so like Denny kind of hinted at this, alluded to this, but see, I mean, when Godwin's back and like, kind of like Chris Godwin again, say Mike Evans is healthy, Russell Gage is healthy, I mean, do you think all three of these guys can be like top 24 receivers in fantasy, or will it not be quite the same dynamic as it was with Godwin, Evans, and AB?
Right. And what's a little bit tricky, I mean, again, it would not be that hard for Gage to have final numbers close to what Antonio Brown had last year, just weighing in that AB kind of got hurt at the end of the year and then left. But I think
that's one way to put it. He did leave. Right.
Yeah. What's tricky is that, like, I don't know, is Leonard Fournette going to get 75 catches again? Because that cribs in on the total as well. Does Rashad White become a guy who is playing more and, you know, sneaking in catches out of the backfield and stuff like that? So the ancillary targets right now, whether guys like Tyler Johnson or Scotty Miller or Jalen Darden or any of the other kind of receiver 4 through 9, are they relevant? Are they vulturing in 4 touchdowns, or are they barely on the field because they have 3 really good receivers?
So Denny wants to ask you, by the way, about Fournette in the backfield in just a second, but we did want to get to the tight ends where, you know, Cameron Brate is someone that this front office has like loved forever. You know, he got kind of like infamous is a strong word, but he got like a eyebrow raising contract back in the day. But right. I think the contract has been restructured, I believe. But
yeah, it's funny. He got like six years and $40 million.
Yeah,
back then, and it was one of those where, again, if like only the first 2 years are guaranteed, it's kind still, of monopoly money on the back end. But he's going to end up getting like $28 million. And to him, I think it's kind of smart for him in that he, like, this is 3 years in a row he's taken less money than he was supposed to get just to stay here and get to play with Brady. And again, I mean, you go back to that boat parade Lombardi toss. That's Cam Brate that caught it from Brady. So good on him. You know, I think he's happy here. He might have been able to get a little bit more to be, you know, a bad team's number one tight end somewhere. But what's the fun in that?
I didn't know that. I didn't know that about the boat toss. That's big. I'm adjusting my ranks as
it's really big intel. And yeah, Greg, I mean, I know you cover the boat. I don't know if you know where Cameron Brate went to college, though. You know, maybe he's maybe
I had never heard about that. Him and Fitzpatrick, I always forget where they went. Some were good, but
see, do you think we'll see a targets recommitment to Cameron Brate, or like you said, will Cade Otton, who fantasy players have been wondering about, will he be involved as rookie? I mean, we know it's tough with rookie pass catchers and Tom Brady, especially at a position like tight end with an infamously difficult learning curve. But do you think is Cam Brate going to be someone we fantasy managers can like at least stream, like, or like a 5-catch game, like won't be like shocking from Cameron
Brate? Right. No, right now, as it stands, I mean, Brate should be a 45 catch, 6-touchdown guy. Kind of, I mean, he's had three seasons with 6 or more touchdowns in his history. He goes back like before even OJ Howard, you know, pre Gronk, pre OJ. And that's kind of where he'd be right now. I really think the Bucs will recognize the void they have without Gronk. And I think right now they're kind of still kind of keeping the door open for Gronk. But I think they'll sign a veteran tight end. I think it'll be a Kyle Rudolph type, somebody who's likely to kind of be dead even with Brate, where maybe you have 2 30-catch tight ends. And again, Otten could be that guy. We just don't know. And because physically he hasn't done anything hasn't practiced, hasn't played in coming up on 8 months. So it's hard to know. They can't count on him to be a tight end one if they haven't even seen him practice yet. That's the problem. So
we know, too, that if you're a beat writer, you don't have like a magic wand to like answer these questions. But like, we sometimes look at like beats as like sage oracles. But like with Gronk, what is your feel? Like, will we see him in 2022 or no? What is your gut feel?
First of all, it kind of depends on how the season goes. I think if they have the success they want to have and they're not getting the production they want to have from tight end, Gronk's going to keep himself in shape. I think we've seen like half the videos he's posted in retirement, if you will, are him working out or him still looking like an NFL tight end. So long as that's the case, again, if it's, you know, Thanksgiving and Brady wants an upgrade, I think he makes the call and I think Gronk listens hard, you know. But I don't know if things are going swimmingly, if the Bucs plan B checks out and Eric Ebron or Jared Cook has 4 touchdowns or something, and maybe they don't need Gronkowski. But I definitely think it's in play if they needed him. He's already done it once. And I don't think he'd do it anywhere but here in Brady. But again, I think it'd be a phone call he would take if Brady wanted to reach out to him.
Sounds like a nightmare for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like he's like a week 14 waiver wire gem.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to quickly ask you about the Bucs backfield. So I'm not sure if you saw how tapped in you are to fantasy football Twitter, but
no, sure.
There was a lot of buzz about Leonard Fournette looking a little larger than we're used to seeing, right. You know, when he showed up for minicamps. is this something that caught any attention within the organization? Is this normal for Lenny?
It was weird in that we had kind of made the observation. I only saw him at two practices, and these are very leisurely minicamp practices, but he looked a little big by Fournette June standards. And then he didn't help himself in that he said, we're like, hey, so where are you at right now? And he's like 240 something. And you're like, wow, you shouldn't have said that out loud. That wasn't.
Yeah, I know.
And he was good about saying, like, he kind of has done this in the past where he's had a first half of the summer that wasn't very good. If you follow him on social media, he looks a lot better right now. He's posting workout videos. He's doing, it's like Rocky IV stuff, you know, getting ready for this season. So he looks better now than he did a month ago when they had their mandatory mini camp. And again, by all accounts, Todd Bowles was like, you know, they're guys that look like they're in shape right now and will need to drop weight a month from now. So he cares what they look like and what condition they're in when they get to camp. So I think he'll be able to kind of absolve himself or whatever,
right?
You know, fun summer he had for a month or so before things got going.
He's a guy who enjoys his food.
If I was from New Orleans, if I, you know, hey, I'd be doing the same thing much more than a month or two out of the year.
Danny, don't you wish we could just add and drop 12 to 13 pounds like with the drop of a hat?
I'd have to dedicate my whole life to it.
And if you mention that, like these linemen will be like, yeah, if I weigh myself before the morning practice and after the afternoon practice, it'll be 10, 12 pounds difference.
In that division. You guys are in the hot and humid division.
Man, that's amazing. And then quickly, just as a side note, Rashad White, someone who fantasy managers really, really like as a prospect coming out, you know, good landing spot. Rashad White has talked about how his goal is to be the starter. He doesn't seem okay with just taking a back seat to Fournette. I know the team has a say in that, but is he someone who should be stashed on fantasy bench?
Yeah, like there's really so little like fantasy flyer types on this Bucs roster. So many of them are just big established, well names, Evans, Godwin, Fournette, all these types. Rashad White should be in that. I think of him as the Bucs' number two back. They have Keyshawn Vaughn, who's a third year back. They have Gio Bernard, who's a veteran pass catcher type.
Denny's favorite player. Denny's favorite player because he catches cheap receptions in fantasy.
I talked about
PPR. He's the PPR vulture, absolutely. But he barely. I mean, Bernard. If anybody had him in fantasy football last year, if it's possible to be disappointed by Gio Bernard, he was not a relevant player.
It's a tough road to hoe.
Yeah. So I think of Rashad White as soon as he has the confidence of his coaches that he can handle the pass pro, which I think he's good at, and protect Brady, I think he immediately cuts into Vaughn's role as the next guy in whenever Fournette needs a third or fourth series off. And I also think he probably steps ahead of Bernard as a pass catching sub. I mean, Fournette can be a three down guy. Fournette's going to get 100 targets before the year's over. But I think they're more likely to go to the young guy with upside in White than they are to put too much. I mean, they trust Bernard, and that's what you have to play catch up with is the trust you have in a 30-year-old who has 500 catches. But I think Rashad White, you think about him being a third-round pick, somebody they've talked about glowingly, he'll have a chance to be a solid second back. And if anything happens to Fournette, he would be in a good spot.
That's good.
Yeah, I think that's a great point on White, too. We know that it can be tough for rookies and Tom Brady, but these are Geo's aging. I mean, Keyshawn Vaughn.
Keyshawn Vaughn was a similarly drafted running back 2 years ago and barely played at all. I mean, I think he had one touchdown catch against the Chargers maybe, and maybe had 100 yards from of total offense his rookie year. So he would be the model for if you can't quite convince the coaches you're the guy they can trust in key situations, maybe you're inactive. Maybe you're a special teams guy. I think White's in a better position than Keyshawn was 2 years earlier.
Well, you just guaranteed we'll be drafting him all summer. Yep. Denny will be sending you a sternly worded letter if that does not work out. So
absolutely.
No, Greg, awesome stuff. Thank you so much for joining us and breaking it all down. We got good stuff on the receivers, the backfield, even the tight ends. So I would say that was a very, very successful show. So, Greg, thank you so much for joining us. It was awesome.
Oh, no problem. Guys, thanks again. We'll do it again during the season. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
It is now our pleasure to welcome in Panthers.com's Darren Gant. Darren, of course, you may not even really remember. We didn't really cross paths much, but you were a former coworker, too, at Pro Football Talk, NBC. We're all remote employees, so it's not like we like run into each other in the cafeteria.
Everyone in the business is a former NBC employee at some point. So it's okay. Those were great years. We had a lot of fun. Enjoyed working with Mike and those guys. So it was definitely a good time.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the life of being a remote employee, though. It's weird. You can work with someone we were both NBC employees for probably at least half a decade overlap. And
sure.
And I met you one time. You probably remember we had like that summit a few years ago.
Yep.
We shook hands at the summit.
No doubt. I remember that. It was the one time in about 5 years everybody was in the same place at the same time. If, you know, anything terrible would have happened. That's why they make the president and the vice president fly on separate planes. You know, you can't put everybody together like that too often.
Yeah, Denny wasn't allowed on the premises, so he wasn't even there for that.
It was a tragedy.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, Darren, we'll just get right into it. The single most important player in fantasy football is Christian McCaffrey. He's been limited to just 10 games over the past seasons, you know, due to a variety of injuries. Is there any sense that his role might be scaled back this year, or that hasn't happened in the past as a response to his injuries? Or is it just all systems go as normal this year?
The limit is Christian and how often he's available. I mean, that's really the only limit for him. I think, you know, there have been people in the past who've tried to manage him, and they think, okay, well, maybe if it's fewer reps, you know, if Christian McCaffrey's healthy and playing every game, he's one of the 10 most productive players in the league. So, of course, you want your best players to have the ball as much as they possibly can. I mean, that's just common sense. So when he is well, he is one of those guys. That's obviously been a challenge the last couple of years, and we'll see how this year goes. I think a lot of times when things start to snowball on guys the way they have with Christian the last couple of years, we start looking too deeply for reasons. Oh, is it because of usage? Is it because of his off-season training regimen? Sometimes it's just dumb luck. When somebody falls across the back of your ankle, there's no amount of off-season conditioning or not conditioning or yoga or sleep tracing or anything else that's going to change that. I mean, when you land on your shoulder in Kansas City the wrong way and break up, you know, those things just happen. And unfortunately for Christian, they've kept just happening to him for the last little bit. If he's well, he's going to get it a lot. Now, they go out and they sign Deontay Foreman this offseason. I think it's a good add because he's a different kind of back. You know, not that anybody is like for like Christian McCaffrey. But last year when they go to Chuba Hubbard as a rookie, Chuba's more of a speed guy. You try to get him outside, see if he can pop something big. Foreman's a different kind of back. He's a load. He's the guy who replaced Derrick Henry as a like for like and did Derrick Henry things for about a month and a half there. So a different aspect to the offense. But listen, everybody here knows it. Matt Rhule knows it. Ben McAdoo knows it. If you've got the option to give it to Christian McCaffrey 25 times a game, that's a thing that's good for your football team.
Do you think, Darren, that Foreman, you know, who is being drafted at the end of fantasy drafts as kind of a running back insurance for McCaffrey, do you think that he can or will be used kind of between the tackles for the tough running and McCaffrey will be saved more for the in-space stuff?
Yeah, I think in theory that's correct. Now, if it's third and one in the fourth quarter and you really need to convert something to try to win a game, Christian McCaffrey's going to get the, you know.
Sure.
But I do think along the way they'll try to create situations where there are things Deontay can do. I mean, they've talked about that throughout. They want to be more of a downhill running team when they can. Christian can do some of that too. I mean, I think one of the things, because he's smaller – people tend to think he can't run inside. He's capable of it, and he's quite good at it. He's just hasn't been available to do it as much lately. Right. But, yeah, I do think they want to find things Foreman can do along the way just to kind of create the opportunity for Christian to, I guess, stay fresh is the way to say it. But, again, I think all of this comes with the preface of Christian McCaffrey. You give him the ball because of the things he can do with it.
Quick follow up, Pat, if you don't mind. If CMC, if the event, you know, were to occur where he does miss some time this year, who would you expect to be the lead, the primary back in the Carolina backfield?
I would think at that point it probably is Foreman, just based on having done it. I mean, Chuba had moments last year where he looked good, but, you know, you're talking about a guy who, you know, showed some flashes as a fourth round pick versus somebody who performed at a pretty high level consistently for Tennessee right. over the second half of last year. So I think based on having done it a lot, my suspicion would be that would be a Foreman situation and some Chuba mixed in, you know, but again, that's the ultimate, oh my God, nobody in Carolina hopes that happened situation. So,
yeah, I think you made a lot of interesting points there, Darren, where like Deontay was a very interesting signing, I thought, because understandably, the Panthers hadn't really invested a ton of resources in their reserve backs, because why would you when you have Christian McCaffrey? And I thought it was probably good for them to take it a little more seriously. Not that they didn't take it seriously with the Chuba pick.
I mean, a couple years ago, Mike Davis goes over 1,000 yards combined from scrimmage. And in a situation where Christian's not available during the Teddy Bridgewater year, that's kind of what they needed from that position, was somebody who could run inside but was still kind of a horizontal threat in the passing game, more so than a vertical one. And Mike had a good year for them a couple of years ago.
And I too think you, I think probably you hit the nail on the head with, in theory, maybe they would like to take a little pressure off Christian McCaffrey, but he's like the classic, like best laid plans player. Like you said, if he's healthy,
go just do it. Don't overthink it.
It doesn't matter what the summer plans were. He's going to be getting the ball.
Correct. And we'll see. And Christian's talked about trying to adjust the offseason and different things. But I mean, this guy is, I can tell you from having watched him work up close for a few years, he's not cheating the process if he talks about taking it a little easier this offseason. This guy puts a ton into it, and it's killing him not to be out there, as you might imagine.
So then we'll switch gears now to the receiver core, where it's been reported that Terrace Marshall appears more confident in the team's offense. He's drawn the praise of head coach Matt Rhule. You know, it's kind of a lost rookie year. Maybe lost is a strong word, but how is his offseason going? How do you envision his role in the 2022 offense?
Yeah, we'll see. And I think he's in an interesting spot, because going into last season, you know, he was a known commodity to Joe Brady from their time at LSU. He was also coming off an injury, and I don't think he was 100% well going into the year. It slowed him down in terms of what he was able to do through the offseason. So I don't think he started at square one with everybody else. He was decent the first half of the season, got a concussion early and kind of tailed off, never heard from him again, really, the rest of the year. But last year was such a hard thing to draw conclusions from for the Carolina Panthers offense because – and again, we've been talking for what, 5-10 minutes, and we haven't gotten to the elephant in the room yet. It's quarterback. And because there was instability at quarterback, because Sam wasn't great when he was on the field at certain stretches, at certain points he was perfectly serviceable. But because the whole system was broken, so to speak, last year, it was hard to pick out any one little part and say, oh, well, that's good. Well, that's okay. We can do more of that. This is all right. We can live with this. It just, the whole thing was bad. So that's why this offseason, you go out, you didn't make a change at quarterback, at least not yet. And what time is it? It's July 5th.
I was gonna say, the next time you get on a plane, that's when it might happen.
Yeah, when I go walk the dogs later, that's why I always carry the phone with me. It could happen at any point. I mean, this team has built a reputation for being active in the quarterback market. They've earned that reputation. It's there for a reason. They've been in on every deal, as Scott Fitterer says, so they might be in on more deals. But if nothing changes, you know, there is at least an opportunity for the entire system to work a little better, because I know this isn't necessarily the kind of fantasy advice anybody wants this time of year, but going out this offseason and signing an Austin Corbett on the first day of free agency, coming back in the first week with Bradley Bozeman, who could end up starting at center, using your first draft pick on the guy you had rated highest on your board in Ike Ekwonu, that offensive line's better. No matter who is at quarterback, no matter all the other things with Ben McAdoo's design versus Joe Brady's, any of that kind of stuff, everything has an opportunity to be better because of that. And I think that, you know, is going to help Sam or whoever is at quarterback, or if Matt Corral ends up playing at some point this year, or Christian McCaffrey or DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, all those guys, everything's going to be a little bit better because that part is more stable. It was a mess last year. And I think that might be charitably describing what happened with them. They started 14 different combinations of offensive linemen in 17 games. That's neither normal nor good.
No.
So being able to invest those kind of resources this offseason was huge. And just trying, I think the way they're built, they don't, there are teams in the NFL that have to be efficient and excellent offensively to succeed. I think for them to succeed, and whatever success looks like for them this year, is going to largely be based on defense, is largely going to be based on not making gigantic mistakes on the other side of the ball. And I think kind of creating the structure around everybody helps that. I mean, everybody wants to build a new park. Nobody wants to build a new road, but the road helps create the infrastructure for everything else in the community.
It's infrastructure week this week.
That's right.
I will say, you mentioned Robbie Anderson. So Robbie Anderson had maybe the quietest 109 target season that I've ever seen last year. I can't believe he had 109 targets, but he did. Anderson was targeted on about 19% of his routes, which is well behind DJ Moore. Yeah. Is there any scenario where Anderson takes even a slightly more prominent role on, you know, opposite Moore?
I think they want that to be the case, but that's kind of along the same lines of the theory of Christian McCaffrey. You know, you'd like to have Robbie more involved. They've said that out loud this offseason. They'd like to create more opportunities for him because Robbie can do some things. Again, go back 2 years ago, Robbie was a 90 catch guy instead of a 50 catch guy and looked like a completely different player. And while he's got this reputation as just a speed guy, just a downfield guy, Robbie took a lot of intermediate routes and turned them into bigger plays. For a little skinny guy, he's not afraid to go across the middle. He's got some toughness about him on the field and can make some plays. Those plays weren't necessarily there to be made last year. You alluded to the numbers of, you know, the percentage of targets. He just didn't see as much action last year. And he had problems too. I mean, he dropped passes last year, was not great. But because there's that other guy on the other side who's so consistently good year in, year out, and DJ Moore. And again, I am not a huge fantasy numbers guy, but DJ Moore has produced at a high level over the last 3 years with some frankly not ideal quarterback play around him. So he's been really good, and I think you want to keep the ball in DJ's hands, but getting Robbie a little more involved is obviously something they'd prefer to do.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen him, but there are brutal supercuts on YouTube of DJ Moore being missed by Panthers quarterbacks over his head, short. Well, he's wide open. He's beaten the whole defense, and they can't get it to him.
Yeah, I mean, he caught late stage Cam Newton when passing offense was a struggle. You know, Bridgewater, it was okay. You know, last year was not ideal. So we'll see how this year develops.
At least, as you can see, we're all real healthy, well-adjusted people. They make super cuts of missed DJ Moore targets. And fantasy is a very healthy hobby.
My brain is okay.
Yeah, and you say, you know, you're not a fantasy. Like, too, you brought some important context there to the Terrace Marshall struggles, the Robbie Anderson struggles, where it can, I mean, we, in theory, like, we realize all that, but like how, like, it, like, you shouldn't be judging these guys. Yeah. In a year where the offensive line is in chaos, when the quarterback situation is in chaos, when the best player on the offense plays three games.
Right.
And so, like, it's important for us to, you know, Terrace Marshall.
And you fire a coordinator in the middle of the season. Yeah. Yeah. So those things start to stack up at a certain point. So, you know, I think to that, I mean, Terrace has had a good summer. He looks a little bit more comfortable being an NFL wide receiver than he did a year ago. He's healthier now than he was at this point last year. It is one big thing. And I think, you know, McAdoo, while Ben's an easy target a lot of times, I think, because of the big suit in New York and the hair and all that kind of stuff. Ben's an easy
target. A lot of different styles in New York.
He's experimented with a lot of different looks. But if you isolate Ben McAdoo play caller, the resume is pretty good. And we'll see how that turns out here. But I think, again, kind of like the offensive line situation, it was a chance to add some stability and some gravity to an offense that didn't necessarily have it a year ago.
Yeah, that's a people nationally, you know, we kind of laughed at the Ben McAdoo hiring a little bit, but then it's kind of when you go back and look at his time with the Giants, like, wow, he actually made some lemonade out of some not that great a batch of lemons with those late Giants offenses, like the end stage Eli Manning. Mm-hmm. And where it's actually a pretty intriguing hire, I feel like, for the Panthers.
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons. And they did a lot of that over the offseason. That was one of Rule's big emphasis points this year is he had to take a staff that was very young to begin with. I remember doing the math a couple months ago. I think his first staff in 2020 had a combined 71, 72 years of NFL experience across the board. This staff has 150 some years of NFL experience. A lot of that's been McAdoo instead of Joe Brady. A good bit of that's James Campen coming in to coach the offensive line, which is huge. But adding guys like Chris Tabor, Paul Pasqualoni, Steve Wilks, you know, adding a former defensive coordinator and head coach as a position coach to your defense, those are all pretty significant adds for a team that needed a little bit more of that NFL experience coming in.
Darren, we got one more and then we'll get you out of here. Yeah. You know, in fantasy parlance, the Panthers are kind of a narrow target tree, like where we know where most of the targets are going, and DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Christian McCaffrey, maybe Terrace Marshall. Is there anyone else you think might force their way into that mix this year for consistent looks, like maybe a Rashad Higgins, maybe a Tommy Trimble, or is this going to remain like a pretty tight, self-contained group?
I think as long as it's DJ and Christian, and as long as those two are on the field, they're probably going to hog up most of the touches, and rightfully so. And then Robbie's probably the next one down. Trimble's an interesting guy to me, not even a starting tight end. I mean, Ian Thomas is kind of the classic build inline blocking tight end who can occasionally get downfield, but he's one of those guys who's sort of teased with potential and never delivered on it. Trimble's a guy who you can put in a lot of different places and do different stuff with him. You know, he scored on a little bit of a jet sweep type of thing last year. He's becoming more comfortable as a receiver. He never got used all that much that way. He's a guy, if you're looking for those late round kind of, what's this guy's impact going to be? Trimble's a guy who's at least intriguing from that standpoint. But yeah, I mean, the reality is if Christian's healthy, it's going to be mostly Christian. If he's not, it's going to be a whole lot of DJ Moore.
Which we're more than okay with. We want Christian. We want DJ Moore. So yeah. Darren, thank you so much for joining us. Awesome stuff. Again, with Greg, we got great stuff on like every position group. We even got you to talk about Tommy Trimble.
Yes,
here at the end.
That's a big win.
There you go. I do it for the people.
And we hope that for your sake, if the Panthers are going to make a move at quarterback, please just do it while Darren's at home in his office.
Yes.
Maybe like during normal business hours. That would be nice.
Listen, normal is not a word we get to use around here when it comes to the quarterback.
Yeah, you're going
to
be in a car like on a Friday night, like driving somewhere that has spotty cell phone reception.
Yeah, there's a wedding this weekend. So I would say at about 6:01 on Saturday night. That's probably, you know, stay tuned to the news then.
David Tepper, I know you're listening. Call Darren before you make the move, please.
Please, he does. Don't worry about it.
Darren, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk again sometime soon.
You got it, fellas.
And we will be right back after this with Saints reporter John Hendricks.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app powered by PointsBet, to go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands by predicting what will happen in Major League Baseball, on the PGA Tour, and on the NASCAR circuit. We also have a special contest on Tuesday and Thursday called Battle of the Bets, where you can agree or disagree with our experts for a shot to collect some cash. We now welcome in the Saints News Networks, powered by Sports Illustrated. So we have kind of like a mouthful of where we work too. John Hendricks, reporter and writer. Another guy. What is up with the NFC South? Where I feel like every guy we've talked to today, we talked to Greg Allman from The Athletic. We talked to Panthers.com, Darren Gantz, where it just hasn't really been a normal offseason. You had the coach retirement. You have Michael Thomas, question marks swirling. And I guess we'll just start right there with Michael Thomas. We've barely seen him play football since his historically good, 2019, I believe.
Yeah.
Is the team confident Michael Thomas is going to be ready for week one?
Yeah. First, let me just say that you have better luck trying to find the last normal Saints offseason. I don't think there's been one in like 10, 15 years. I don't know. No. It's just something, always something, right? From Breeze retiring, Peyton to Dallas, all these crazy things have popped up. But, you know, to answer your question, look, I think Michael Thomas is definitely on the up and up on everything. And not think I know that he's on the up and up, right? And so, first of all, you know, a lot was blown up because of the things about the surgery and, you know, the postponement, the timing and all that good stuff. But, you know, those fences were mended, right? And that's the good news, is that from a front office perspective, from organization perspective, you know, things are good with Michael Thomas right now, right? And so obviously the big thing is his ankle, is he's ready to go. And you know, look, there's been encouraging things that we've seen. He's been rehabbing at the facility, you know, made a little bit of a guest appearance, if you will, at mini camp, which is good. But obviously the big thing that he was showing the other day on social media was that he's running routes. And so that's a good sign. And that's all signs pointing to Thomas being ready, available, good to go and type of thing. And look, I know the Saints, especially with guys that are coming back from injuries, you know, Taysom Hill's another one, you know, Peyton Turner, Marcus Davenport, guys are going to be really big for this team. I don't think that there's a way that they're not going to be cautious here with some of their approach. I don't think you have to put all gas with Michael Thomas there, but I do expect him, as we get more into training camp, he should be there. He should be a little bit active. And I think the Saints know that this approach with him, he's got to be more that 2019 player, but he doesn't necessarily have to be with all of these help that they've got and reinforcements at wide receiver.
John, a follow-up question on Michael Thomas. We consume a lot of news, a lot of team-related news. We read through whole stories, so you end up seeing, you know, quotes that I think the general NFL consuming public doesn't see. Every time Dennis Allen is asked about Michael Thomas, it's kind of this, he should be ready, and he's rehabbing. He's working on his own in California or whatever. Are things cool between Michael Thomas and the organization right now?
Yeah, definitely. I would say so. I mean, look, and it's different, right? Because DA is completely different than Sean Payton. And I think that's a good way, because DA is going to adopt and kind of install some of his new types of things. And look, I think the thing I've learned about him just early on is I say this because Sean was the same way, but no nonsense type thing. He's a guy that you come in, do your work, let's go home, let's do it right the first time. I think he's been very authoritative. I think he's going to run this team how he needs to. I mean, I know a lot of people look at the sample size of what he did when he was with Oakland, and look, you didn't change in the last 10 years when you did things. I mean, I think that says a lot about, you know, you as a person. But look, with DA, I think that's kind of how he's been approaching with some of these players. That obviously, you know, with Sean, it was a little bit different because Sean didn't want to talk about injuries. He didn't want to talk a lot about.
I was
going to
say, Denny was kind of saying it's hard to get a sense of Michael Thomas's injury time. That's just because the injury has lingered so long. But Sean Payton was like, I mean, that guy, even by NFL standards, you did not get injury information out of Sean.
No, none. No,
straight up.
No. But Dennis, he talked about, you know, he's talked about Peyton Turner, Marcus Davenport, these guys. And then, look, I think the certain belief is that he's a lot more involved there. And then even just talking to Mickey and Mickey Loomis, that is, and just kind of hearing a little bit from that and everything we've heard from the grapevine, there's no reason to think that things are sour there with Michael Thomas. I mean, okay. Again, everything has been nothing but positive. You know what I mean? He's been there. He's been doing the work. He's been putting in the rehab. He's been at the facility. So it's not like he was just been away. He's been there at the facility. We've seen him. We've seen him do the rehab. So I think it's a lot more overblown than what it was a couple of years ago.
I could be reading too far into Michael Thomas's many cryptic tweets.
Everybody does.
I was gonna say, he's like the prototype for the cryptic wide receiver. Michael Thomas, This is a true story. It has me blocked on Twitter. I've never had an interaction.
Me too.
Yeah, never had any sort of interaction with him.
Really?
He's talking about no nonsense.
You're missing a lot.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and he tweets about literally about revenge and stuff. I feel like the classic,
a lot of lyrics.
Receivers are built different, basically.
Yeah, it's the classic.
By the way, John, I realized we were so anxious to talk about Michael Thomas. I didn't even ask you how you were doing or anything.
Oh man, hey, no worries at all, man. I'm doing great. Just kind of enjoying that lull before we get to training camp. And, I'm just looking at the month of August. And I'm like, man, I'm going to be a lot of places in a lot of time. Yeah. Just kind of enjoying that with the family. Good 4th of July, pretty chilled, relaxed. So I've got a wife, 2 kids, and, they keep me plenty busy when I'm not doing football.
So, the lull, hopefully it's not a fake sense of complacency. Because I feel like anytime we think there's a true lull, which is now late June to late July, something crazy happens. So NFL, if you're listening, please let us enjoy our little break.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I jinxed the NFL world too. So you can thank me.
Switch it. Denny's going to ask you more about the receivers in a minute, but we wanted to ask you about Alvin Kamara, who, by his standards, was pretty inefficient on the ground last year. And, that's partly because the team was just kind of an offensive chaos, obviously. And what is your feel on his role after me? I believe he took way more carries than he had ever. Yeah, he had never even had 200 carries before last year. And he's near 250, and that was with missing 3 or 4 games. What is the sense on Alvin Kamara's role this year? Will it maybe the touches be kind of maybe dialed back to more traditional, 14 to 15 per game, or do you think it might stay more like that 18 to 20 range?
I think it'll stay down a little bit more, and then if anything, he's going to be more involved in the receiving department, which is something that was big and missing last season. And look, Jameis Winston said it, about a month ago, maybe that he was actually actively studying some of Drew Brees' film and stuff, studying the usage with the running backs, particularly Kamara, and that's an area where he says he feels he can get better at, right? And so getting Kamara more involved in the passing game, and of course, projecting Kamara with all this legal stuff that's looming and stuff, that's also going to be kind of tough, right? And so, Kamara's going in it and the Saints are kind of going in it, and with the wait and see mentality and seeing how that plays out, August 1st is right around the corner, and it's not just him that's got a court hearing date. It's Marcus May, stemming from February 2021 DUI arrest, which, again, you look at it, it's over a year later, right? And it's still not fixed. And so, with that, I mean, Kamara, look, I think he's going to be a lot more involved in the passing game, especially because, again, not to segue, but, talking about these receivers, you got more talent there, so you have to account for more. I mean, this is a team that was rolling with Kevin White and Kenny Stills, guys that should probably not have been on the field, right? And then you have Trevor Siemian as a quarterback, or then you have, whether it's Taysom Hill or Ian Book. There's just too many.
I wonder if you could even bring yourself to say Ian Book. No offense to Ian Book, but.
Well, look, I can tell you that, I talked to Ronald Curry, a while back, and look, he's talked about how the game has kind of slowed down for him and he's adapted, but he was just having trouble calling plays last year. And so, as a rookie, that's hard to hear. And look, I think he still has it in him, but when I did my initial roster projections, I could see them just carrying Dalton and Winston on the roster and try to slide him on the practice squad. I don't know if that's going to happen, but we've went from Kamara to that, but
To say that Ian Book was put in a difficult spot against Brian Flores, who, one of the best defensive play callers. He was not set up to succeed in that start. I must say that.
I will give Ian Book credit for ending COVID in the NFL.
That's right. After that,
that's tough to watch.
All the protocols went out the window after that. The league, since Ian Book threatened the league with that performance. So getting back to Kamara real quick. So I remember early in the season when Kamara was getting these, relatively enormous workloads as a rusher, not as a pass catcher. I remember Saints beat writers saying, and you were among them, saying, hey, this is not good. He doesn't want to be used this way. The team doesn't really want to use him this way, but they don't have much of a choice at the moment. So they have to do this. And it showed, if you look at his, from a fantasy standpoint, from high value touches, he has excelled in that area, getting high value touches as in inside the 10 yard line and then receptions, dropped per touch, his high value touches per touch dropped last year because he was getting a lot of those empty calorie touches between the 20s. Do you think there is a scenario where they really cut that out of his game, or do you think he'll continue to see that this season?
No, I think they cut it out just because, I mean, you got to remember what happened last year. I mean, they cut Latavius Murray in camp at final roster cuts because Tony Jones Jr. was looking outstanding, and then he gets hurt against the Giants, kind of forces their hand because you have to trade for Mark Ingram, right? And so, and then you had Devontae Freeman in camp, but you had a lot of these undrafted guys or younger guys on the roster just really didn't do anything to take the pressure off of Kamara. I mean, when Ingram was here the first time, he was a great 1-2 punch with Kamara, right? And so it helped alleviate some of that. But going into this season, look, I think you look at the offensive line and some of the deficiencies there. I mean, you could pick your poison, right, with the Saints team. And injuries are part of the game. COVID was part of the game. I mean, you don't go through 50-something plus starters and just not have things break down and be effective. But, again, they didn't have weapons around Kamara, so it was easy to key in on number 41 when he's on the field, right? Just because you didn't have guys that were going to really stretch the field or do a lot of things, and especially when you didn't have the consistency of quarterback, right? And, I mean, that was always a tough thing. And, look, Winston was a guy that was coming in, and he was making the most of it in his early stages. I thought he was doing really well, but, you know, with the utilization of Kamara, they just didn't have a good support system around him to really make him – do what he is capable of doing, right? And so I think it's going to be better this season. Still a lot of question marks as far as when he's going to be on the field and with that league discipline, but I think offensively the offensive line is going to be much better this season. Just a lot of better improvements that this team has made in this offseason.
So I will say, though, I'm sure they want to dial back Kamara's carries, his workload a little bit. I believe before last year, he had never had 20 carries in a game. And then he had 20 carries in week one. He had 20 carries like 5 or 6 times.
Yeah.
And as we've all said, taking turns saying during this interview, they almost certainly want to dial that back, but it's still not great behind him on the depth chart. And we're, you know, you kind of have Tony Jones coming off that loss 2021. Like you said, you have an aging Mark Ingram. Is Mark Ingram really the number two back, you think? Or is this situation finalized, settled, or is there a sense that maybe the Saints are kind of like on the prowl for some backfield help?
Well, you know, I think they believe in Mark, and the fact is Mark believes in himself. I think he has a little bit left in the tank personally. And so, you know, and just talking with him. But, look, they had David Johnson at minicamp. They were really interested in signing him. Didn't work out. Couldn't agree on a contract. Maybe that's something that gets revisited or they trade for somebody. But look, I'm with you. Past those two, you really don't have much, right? And again, Tony Jones Jr., I talked about him earlier, but he was a guy that looked really well, really good in preseason and in training camp. He didn't really do much last season. You've got Dwayne Washington. He's more of a special teams guy. You've got Devin Ozigbo, who they had poached from the Jaguars practice squad, who was on the team a long time ago, or you know, I say a long time ago, but, you know, in NFL years, in NFL calendar, it's a lot.
It's probably
right?
2020
but,
or something.
Yeah, I call that a long time ago. But, you know, he's on the roster. And, look, these are more probably special teams guys. And they've got a guy, Abram Smith, who's
– I was going to say, undrafted. Fantasy managers like are talking about Abram Smith.
Yeah. Deep stash if you're in a dynasty roster. League. That's what I would tell you for something like – but he's someone to keep an eye on. But, you know, I'm with you is – that if they have an injury to Ingram and they have some legal issues with Kamara and he's out, their backfield is toast, right? I'll just say that. That's where their state of the depth on their running back position is right now.
I wanted to ask you about Jarvis Landry's presence in this receivers room. So I know, obviously, he brings a veteran presence, veteran leadership and all that, but he's also an incredibly productive slot receiver who commands targets everywhere he goes. Will his presence, do you think, at all kind of ding Michael Thomas's share of the targets in the New Orleans offense? Because as we know, a lot of Michael Thomas's looks come, you know, in the intermediate part of the field. So do you think Landry, you know, messes with that at all?
Yeah, I think Jarvis Landry's in for a really upward rebound type of career or year for him, right? And so, look, he's looked fantastic, I'll tell you that much. And that's probably been one of the best bargains the Saints has got this offseason with the contract that they got, right? And so he's looked the part. He's looked fantastic. You can see just how rejuvenated, and it's not just him, it's Tyrann Mathieu too, both of these guys coming back home to Louisiana. You just see kind of the reinvigoration with both of these players, right? And so I expect Landry to cut into it, right? And it's not just him. I think Chris Olave is going to do it as well. But look, Thomas is going to do what he can, right? And I think that he's still going to have a good season, but he's got to also be on the field and be available. And Landry's a guy that I think when you look at from a nightmare matchup perspective, especially going in the slot, man, if you're having to look at Olave and Thomas and then rolling Landry there, I mean, it's a pick your poison type situation, I think, with this offense, especially with it hinging around, you know, Jameis being the starter, right, and the unquestioned guy this season. And so, look, I think Landry will have a strong season. I know he hasn't had, you know, 1,000-yard seasons in a couple of years now, but I think he can flirt with it for sure. But I think he's really going to be a guy that moves the sticks. I think he's going to get some red zone targets. And I really just feel like this is a perfect match. And so, you know, he's banking on himself, betting on himself to kind of get that next contract.
You talked about Chris Olave, the rookie, incredibly productive guy coming out of Ohio State. So where does he fit in this offense? We just talked about the intermediate short area targets for Michael Thomas, for
Kamara, two of the best of the 21st century in Michael Thomas and Jarvis Landry.
Right, right. So are we looking at Olave as strictly a deep threat in this offense?
Yeah, I don't think you'd say he's just a deep threat. I mean, I think that, you know, again, everything we've seen in Olave, he looks the part. I mean, every person that you see that talks about Olave, the first thing is how smooth he is and how great of a route runner he is. I think those are his two best qualities, right? He just makes it look natural. He makes it look easy. And look, I think when you look at it, those are the top three guys that are going to be on the field for the receiver department. And look, you still have Tre'Quan Smith, you have Marquez Callaway, Deontay Hardy, guys that played a lot for you last year that are going to be on the field. And so I think with Olave, you can get very creative. I think with him, you can have him stretch the field. I think it's more of a Deontay Hardy type thing if they bring him in as well. But Olave is a guy that, you know, look, he's going to be really interesting to see on the field and where he goes and what kind of his target share is too. I think he's a guy that really is going to find himself a lot more open and a lot more relied upon in this offense going forward. Really intrigued, I think, by him, just because, you know, look, he's come in here, he talked to Jameis, just some of the things he said is he's already in the stages, man, where you need me to go, what do you want to see, what did you see on that type of thing. I mean, he's been a sponge to Jameis Winston and just kind of this offense. And so I really feel like, you know, when you talk about rookies and candidates of the year and such, Olave is somebody that could potentially do that on offense or, you know, maybe in the NFL, but I think he's in for a pretty strong season. I think you're probably going to see him more of that mid to intermediate type production this season.
This is a question I should already know the answer to, but because Jameis is in rehabbing, have him and Olave gotten to throw at all yet, like in view of the media or no? Like, have you got to see that connection in action?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. Been able to see that plenty, right? And so Jarvis has kind of stolen the show, but, you know, him and Olave have worked a pretty good bit, right? And I mean, you see them when they're doing drills, and of course, it's mini camp, right? And so you see some of the formations and see those types of things. And Olave is going to be one of the guys that lines up on the outside. But look, that chemistry, it looks like it's building. It's going well. I mean, there's been some deep shots that they've hooked up on. You know, Winston, I think, is looking up exceptional so far. And, you know, obviously see the videos of him working out. I think he's primed for a huge comeback season. But look, they've been on the field together. They've been working together. You know, and Winston has been staying after practice. He's been the last guy to leave, the first guy here. So that's obviously a little bit encouraging, too, if you're looking at somebody to stash or maybe take it later in a fantasy draft that will probably be there. But you know, him and Olave, I think you're going to build some strong chemistry, and it's going to be who, you know, I don't say too many mouths to feed, but, you know, it's certainly a better problem to have than where you were last year with the bottom of the barrel depth chart.
So you don't need to give fantasy managers extra reasons to want to draft Jameis Winston. They just always want to do it. And you kind of hinted at the final question I want to ask you is you kind of hinted at something interesting there where, like, a lot of guys who kind of like stepped up, like role players who stepped up for bigger roles than they probably should have had last year, and like Deontay Hardy, Marquez Callaway, Tre'Quan Smith. Whereas now, like, all of a sudden, this is such a thin receiver core last year. You know, like, the top three are like set. And do you see any of those guys out of like the Hardy Callaway bunch, like, maybe is emerging as like the clear number four receiver, or is that something that kind of needs to like sort itself out in training camp?
I think it does, but I tell you what, Tre'Quan Smith is a guy that's a lot better of a blocker right now. I mean, he's used and he's a primary blocker, right? So I think that's
not what I wanted when I signed up for it in Dynasty. I was hoping he wouldn't be such a good blocker.
But look, I tell you, he did come on late in the year. You know, I mean, he had what we saw out of him against the Atlanta Falcons in that regular season finale. That's the type of things that I think people were expecting out of him the whole time, right? And so obviously he had a bad start to last year being hurt, and his availability is obviously not there. And that allowed Callaway to come up a lot more, and Hardy as well. But look, I think Smith is probably your guy that you look at right now. And again, Hardy, more of, you know, he does a lot of returning things, but he's also in a crucial year. He wants a new contract, right? And so he's got to be able to prove it that he's going to be more than just a deep threat. I think he can. But right now, when you look at Tre'Quan Smith and the way I think Jameis likes a lot and Mickey likes him a lot, I think he's going to be the guy that you look at right now. But I expect competition in training camp. You know, a guy that might be on the outside looking in is Kirk Merritt. I think he's looked exceptional so far in camp. I think he's someone to watch. He's going to have a tough task trying to unseat some of these guys. And look, I wouldn't even rule out that with the depth that they have, assuming that everybody stays healthy, maybe they don't try to trade one of these guys ahead of the NFL trading deadline when it comes time, or before the season starts for a team that really needs a receiver right now, like New Orleans did last year.
Yeah, you're right. If they stay healthy, they're 6-7 deep at receiver, which is, you know, not even remotely typical. Mm-hmm. And it's so much great stuff. I don't want to hear the Jarvis Landry stealing the show. We want to be excited about Michael Thomas and Chris Olave, John.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot to be excited. But, you know, look, I just think that with Landry coming in, that it's been a perfect match. And I think when you look at value and just what he's going to bring to the table, it's hard not to be excited about him making these one-handed catches or these tough contested catches, just make it look easy, and kind of his fire and passion. And look, when Mike gets out on the field and when he gets back to it, then everything will be about Michael Thomas, right? I feel like that's where we're going to go for it. But for now, what we've seen, it's hard not to love a lot what you've seen of Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, and we know it's been like the offseason of a got that dog in him meme. Jarvis Landry has got like uncontainable levels of dog in him. So I'm actually not surprised to hear it.
Several dogs reside in Jarvis Landry.
I'll tell you, there was a point in minicamp, there was a defensive back that was kind of holding him a good bit, and Jarvis didn't back down. He kind of took a little bit of exception, but that's kind of the fiery passion that you see behind him. And he just, you know, obviously it's football, but, you know, it's like, you're not going to do that to me. And he still made the catch.
Was it CJ Gardner Johnson?
No, it wasn't CJ. No, it was one of the other younger guys. And so they learned the fun way. But man, I tell you what, you brought him up, but I'm interested to see how they go against him once things go up. Him and Trevor Penning, I think, are the two that I want to see when these pads come on and we see training camp. I'm really excited to see both of these guys play against competition.
That will be a lot of fun to see in camp. And John, just awesome stuff. Thank you so much for joining us again. Good stuff on every position group. And just thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. John Hendricks is the lead writer and a Saints reporter for the Saints News Network at Sports Illustrated. And hopefully stays calm. You get your lull, you get your little break before training camp. And hopefully we can talk to you later this year.
Sounds good. Appreciate you guys having me. Thanks.
Now it's on to Denny and I to, the Falcons are in this division.
Yeah, the Falcons are still an NFL team. I checked before the show just to make sure. And yes, they are.
0-7 with like a negative 150 point differential against playoff teams last year. That's a real stat, actually.
It is. They were the worst 7-win team in history.
And they didn't even really get better. So this is, I'll begin the Falcons talk with this. A team that is this bad, they have needs on the offensive line, needs on the defensive line, needs in the secondary. I mean, there's needs in like every important position group. And yet, back-to-back years, they've taken a skill player with their top eight pick. I mean, we're fantasy guys. I mean, we want skill players, but it doesn't seem like a way to rebuild a team.
So to me, not an expert in team building on the NFL level.
Curious.
It seems like the good teams take some pretty boring picks sometimes and don't always reach for the shiniest player in the draft. And that seems to be the way the Falcons are going about it. I'm not sure if that's going to pay off in the long run. In fact, I think the Falcons are a team that's down so bad at this point that they're going to have to really be committed to Arthur Smith for him to get out of this lull that they're going to be in. And lull is a very kind word, by the way.
Yeah, this was seriously the worst 7-10 team you'll ever see, because any time last year that they had to play a real team, they just got seriously annihilated. The actual stat was against playoff teams last year. 0-7 with a -159-point differential. Oh, I actually don't even know how that's possible.
I mean, it does, you know, it does make sense. I do recall every time the Falcons played a contender, they got thumped, humiliated.
Do you remember what happened? Do you remember the fun fact from what happened against the Falcons when the Falcons played the Patriots on Thursday Night Football?
No. It was
a shutout loss. And in the shutout loss, they had three different quarterbacks throw interceptions.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Including Franks.
Felipe Franks. Felipe Franks,
who has since converted to tight end.
I thought you were going to say converted to something else.
No. not to Catholicism, but to tight end.
Yes. But so we're talking about the skill players. We talk about, again, it was a top four pick on Kyle Pitts. It was a top eight pick on Drake London. We know this receiver core is still, like, shockingly thin. We also know, like, Drake London, he's not a guy who's, like, he's not entering the NFL famed for, like, creating separation. He's entering the NFL famed for being a big guy who wins with his body, who's very savvy. Like, he's a very savvy body user, I was going to say. I don't know. He's very good in space. He knows how to use his size. But it can be tough to translate as a rip, but there's just so little target competition. I mean, are we viewing Drake London as a wide receiver three right off the bat, despite maybe some questions about his game?
Yeah, I think that, you know, just from a target distribution standpoint, I think that, he should be a wide receiver three, barring some sort of, you know, disaster to start his rookie season, because there's really just, you know, there's Kyle Pitts and then him and then nobody.
There's Damier Bird. Damier, that's right.
Yeah, Damier Bird, who,
Geronimo Allison, Frank Darby. I mean, this is Frank Darby erasure from you, Denny.
Wait a second. That guy from the Raiders who all fantasy football Twitter loves.
Come on, we were part of that probably.
Brian Edwards,
B-R-Y-A-N Edwards.
No. I never got the Brian Edwards thing. But
I kind of did. Isn't he like a really good athlete? He's really big.
He is. I'm off big, strong receivers. They all need to be 5'10", 180 pounds.
It's true.
And the new receiver prototype. I guess Brian Edwards probably pops up there at some point. But yeah, from a volume standpoint, that's fine. Also, you know, Drake London was used a lot at the line of scrimmage to catch balls around the line of scrimmage in college.
True. He was used different than his size would indicate at USC. So
I think that really affected his separation numbers, because obviously you're not getting much separation if you're getting the ball 1 yard beyond the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, it's true. And again, unlike N'Keal Harry, was another guy I always really noticed in this college. I'm like, this dude has people draped over him all the time. Like, I think Drake London, he's one of those guys who really, really knows how to, like, create space in tight quarters. And I think he could actually translate those skills to the NFL level. But I just don't think I'm going to bet on that skill set as a rookie with Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder.
It's hard, honestly. Like, it's hard even to get excited to draft Kyle Pitts. I have to say, I get the reasoning, like, second year tight end, and, you know, the tight ends do make leaps from rookie year to second year, and I get all that. He is generational in every sense of the word. Again, I understand, but man, to be dragged down by this offense is a real possibility, you know. And even if this offense was passable, I would be super bullish on Pitts. But, you know, he couldn't survive it last year from a fantasy standpoint. Now, he had a good season. He had a spectacular rookie season for a tight end, but from a fantasy standpoint, didn't happen. I don't know if it's happening this year.
I mean, to survive this, he basically needs to be like Calvin Johnson 2.0, which is within the range of outcomes.
But
he basically needs to be Calvin Johnson. And Marcus Mariota, by the way, I mean, kind of an interesting second chance guy, but not really with this group. Like, I just don't see how this is good for anyone. Like, this is a really bad, like, circular environment. What is bad for Kyle Pitts is bad for Marcus Mariota, et cetera. Or it's just like, why are any of these people in this situation?
Yeah, it's not good. I know Mariota has that experience in Arthur Smith's system.
He had some dog in him in Vegas too.
He did. The dog
yelled a lot more.
Put into it. Yes, he was banging his head against other guys' helmets and really, really pumped up. So hopefully that. But then again, He also missed like 10 weeks of the season because he ran it one time.
That's a really good point.
On opening night.
And that was always the thing with him in Tennessee was, why is this guy not running? Just run. Just run.
Yes.
Please run. It's what why we loved you at the former Pac-12 school, Oregon. I'm just assuming they're in a different conference since this podcast started.
Yes,
I think Denny wouldn't know what I'm talking about.
No, I do. Every college team is now in the Big Ten, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
There you go.
But Denny said, we're not going to talk much more about the Falcons, but someone like no one knows what to make of this offseason is Cordarrelle Patterson. Cause like everyone in the Falcons organization, kind of including CPAT, it's like, yeah, I don't know if I should run so much again in 2022. but you've come across some interesting Cordarrelle Patterson facts while you've been researching an article, I hear.
I did. Look, I'm you know, looking into running backs who have succeeded in both yards per route run and targets per route run on small sample sizes, just to get an idea, get a feel for who might excel in that role if they land it this year. Anyway, CPAT pops up everywhere. This guy was tremendously efficient as a pass catcher, not only out of the Atlanta backfield, but also when he had chances out of the New England backfield. Not so much with the Bears, but you know, it's
as one does.
That maybe goes without saying. But he's at the top. No matter how I slice and dice the parameters for what I'm looking for, he pops. Like he's really good at both commanding targets and then doing a lot with those targets. So yes, he probably won't get, you know, between the tackles carries this season so much, and that's a great thing. I think that's good. But if they're using him, if they use him out of the backfield as a pass catcher, we should not dismiss. And I'm talking to myself right now. I should not dismiss him because he's excellent in that role.
Yeah, and like as we just highlighted, it's not like the target competition has really increased. And as they're kind of hinting, maybe giving him fewer carries, maybe he could just become a pass catcher extraordinaire out of the backfield, which would seem to be the most sensible way to use him, really. I mean, he's a total mismatch. He is, in theory, a receiver. We'll hear about this. You guys see this?
There it is.
Yeah, Cordarrelle Patterson. Yeah, I can't do it with the guests on the show.
No. God.
Can't have a writer from the Athletic's owned by the New York Times. Now I can't just be going into a Jay Leno impression.
No, I would have fleed in embarrassment.
Yeah, fled. You know what's funny too is that at one point John Hendricks said Segway, which is the proper way to pronounce that word, and super, which I knew super embarrassingly a few weeks ago in the pod, I said Sieg.
You know, that
I hadn't said it out loud in a while, and I just said Sieg.
That rings a bell, and I remember being like, I don't know.
Someone tweeted at me after the podcast.
That word doesn't strike me as one I recognize.
No, it's how you say it.
That's how they say it in France.
Yeah, I had written it so many times I'd gone several years without saying it, and I just said Sieg.
Yeah.
Someone tweeted at me.
Hey, you know, that's the problem with reading, I have to say.
It's true.
You know, the problem with reading is you come across a lot of words and that you know the meaning of them, and you don't have to stumble across. You don't even have to look them up. You just know. But you don't know how to say them because it's in your head. So when it comes time to display your knowledge, you can't because you don't know how to say it. So you say Sieg.
I know. It seriously happens more than I would like to admit. And it happens with player names, too. Or like read someone's name for like 2 years and like, how do you say Tom Brady? I mean, Brady?
Oh, no. Listen, Chris Olave, I was deathly afraid to say his name for like 3 months this offseason because I heard it pronounced two or three different ways. And
so Olave.
And I, you know, reading about him obsessively, I'm thinking, well, I have no clue how to say this guy's name. Olav, you know?
I'm out of jokes. Yeah. And another thing we didn't do with the beats, we didn't like riff for 5 minutes off the top. So now we're just riffing now. And I guess we should probably just end the show.
We got in our riffing time, and I'm happy about that.
I was gonna ask about zero RB in the Falcons backfield. We've already talked about that a bunch. Let's just not talk about that anymore.
You know, I'm fine with that.
Tyler Algier, Damian Williams. Is it a classic take whoever's cheaper, right? Maybe.
No, I think it's just Algier. I don't get the thing where people are like, oh, Mike Davis burned me last year, so I'm not taking another Falcons running. You took Mike Davis in the fourth, and you got duped by the worst running back selection in the history of fantasy football. Don't make it. Don't continue to be mad. I won't tell the newspaper you're mad, but go ahead. Go ahead and draft Tyler Allgeier. It's not. It won't hurt you.
Yeah. So I was gonna say which division we're previewing next week. I don't remember.
It's one of them.
Yeah, it's one of the teams we're previewing next week. We'll be back on Monday with another divisional preview episode. I don't know if it'll be with Denny or Patrick Crane. We'll figure that out. Whoever on their best behavior this week. Okay. It's gonna be. It was a great show. Thank you so much to Greg Aumann from The Athletic, Darren Gant from Panthers.com, and John Hendricks from the Saints News Network at Sports Illustrated. Really great information from all three. Hopefully we said one or two useful things about the Falcons. Thank you so much for joining us today, Denny. And we'll be back later this week.